You're listening to Central Time. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Rob Ferret today. And coming up, get ready to laugh. Our guest will talk about the mental and physical benefits of laughing and how even a forced laugh can boost your mood. But for now, it's Food Friday, and today we're going to get to know one of the great Latin American food cultures that often gets overlooked here in the U.S. Puerto Rico has a rich culinary tradition that was disrupted by colonization but remains strong in those who take the time to continue it. And our next guest is at the forefront of those efforts. She's here to bring her family's Puerto Rican cooking to our kitchen. And you can join the conversation at 1-800-642-1234. What questions do you have about Puerto Rican cuisine? Have you had much Puerto Rican food in your life? And what are some of your favorites? What would you like to try? Join us, 1-800-642-1234. You can always post on the Ideas Network Facebook page as well. Ileana Maisonet is the first Puerto Rican food columnist in the U.S., and her new cookbook is called Diasporican, a Puerto Rican cookbook. Ileana, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
And let's just start with how you got started in the kitchen and a little bit of your history, if you would. What made you so, what got you cooking authentic Puerto Rican foods?
Well, first of all, I think I would be careful when we use the terminology authentic, because authentic to me is not necessarily authentic to other Puerto Ricans, because everybody does things differently. But I think that I started to really dive into my grandma's recipes when I finished culinary school in 2009, so...
Yeah, and that's part of your book, Diasporican, is the diversity within the Puerto Rican community and how that's reflected in your food. And also in your cookbook, it's not just a cookbook, it's also a memoir. It's a story of you, but it's also the story of Puerto Rico itself. How did it all come together for you?
Well, you know, I just feel like it's almost impossible to talk about Puerto Rican food or really kind of any food in general without talking about the history of things, because the history is what created kind of the unique diversity that is Puerto Rican food, you know, like, and I feel like that's why a lot of people don't really know anything about it, because, you know, people like things to be in a nice little tight, unique box because it's easy to understand, but that's not Puerto Rican food.
So if that's not what Puerto Rican food is, Ileana, tell us, how would you describe it?
Well, for me, which is the reason why my book is called Diasporican, is, you know, I'm cooking Puerto Rican food out of Northern California, which is where I was born and raised, you know. So the way that my grandmother did it kind of changed, you know, from being in California and having to work with what she had. So if we're going to make things like pasteles, which is a really traditional and old Puerto Rican recipe, that's pretty much like, you know, indigenous, usually it's wrapped with banana or plantain leaves, and now they do plantain leaves and parchment paper, but she did neither. She wrapped it in foil because aluminum foil was a lot easier and more economic. And that's how I make pasteles. But, you know, if I'm talking to somebody in Puerto Rico on the island and I say that, it's an abomination.
So it really does run the gamut. Ileana Maisonet, our guest for this Food Friday, talking about Puerto Rican cuisine and asking you what you've tried and what you've enjoyed and what you're curious about trying. Let's take your calls now at 1-800-642-1234, where Scott in West Bend standing by. Scott, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
What do you like? What do you know?
Okay, so last January, we went on a trip to Puerto Rico, and I got to try a lot of the different foods there, but I have to say my favorite is mofongo. It's mashed plantain. It's kind of similar to mashed potatoes, but it's even better, and a lot of times they'll serve it with a protein, like we would eat it with chicken a lot. So good. I just love mofongo.
Mofongo. Ileana, tell us about it.
So mofongo is a dish that's pretty, I would say it's one of the older recipes. It's made out of, there are different types, mofongo, bifongo, bifongo, and trifongo. Mofongo is just mashed fried green plantains, and then if you add like another tuber to it, like yuca or ripe plantains, and it becomes a bifongo, bi being bi meaning two. And if you add like the green, the yellow, and like yuca, then it becomes the trifongo. And now you have like three of them. It's mashed and it's usually stuffed or topped with like shrimp criolla, which is like a red sauce, garlicky shrimp, or sometimes fried chicken, sometimes fried pork.
It sounds delicious. That now you mentioned the garlic. What are some of the flavors that that your pantry has, Ileana, that if we wanted to try some Puerto Rican foods, we'd want to make staples of our pantry?
The things that I always keep on hand, and I feel like almost every Puerto Rican will always keep on hand to make Puerto Rican food, is garlic, obviously, tomatoes, canned tomato sauce, or if you're in the UK or Australia, then you're going to use passata because you don't have access to tomato sauce, and sofrito. Sofrito is just like the base herb blend to all of our savory cooking. It has cilantro or culantro, garlic, onions, peppers, and tomatoes, which is a kind of a controversial ingredient.
I'm sorry, why is it controversial?
Because not everyone uses tomatoes in it. A lot of people don't think that tomatoes belong in it, but there is a difference between sofrito and recaíto. Recao is the word that we use for culantro, which is what we used before we found cilantro. You know, they're two different things, of course. And I just personally find that adding tomatoes once it cooks down, it's almost the same with it if you would add the reason why you're adding tomato sauce. Like it kind of just adds a nice, like a sweetness and a juiciness to it.
It sounds like no matter what recipe you bring up, there would be some debate around whether or not this is the way to
Yes.
do it. These are the
Yes,
ingredients for
exactly.
it.
Everyone has their own way of doing it. And the thing is that every Puerto Rican says that that is the way that it should be done. When mostly you should be saying, this is how my family does it, and this is how I like it, instead of saying, this is how it is. Punta, punto, period.
I think I would enjoy some of those debates and then being the taste tester to be able to try them out. I just wouldn't want to be the judge and have to say one is better than the other at any point. So tell me some of the feedback. I mean, just to remind folks, your book was named one of the best cookbooks of 2022 by the New York Times. But I am curious, considering what we've just talked about, what some of the feedback might have been so far from others who were like, that's not how we do it here.
Well, I think the reason why I think that I have already gotten all of the negative feedback early on in my career when I wrote as a columnist for the Chronicle. I already got a lot of those emails back then. So I think a lot of those, I've kind of weeded out a lot of those purists, the traditionalists. But I also think that I got away with a lot because I called the book Diasporican, because it's coming from a perspective of the Puerto Ricans here. That are living stateside, as opposed to the Puerto Ricans that are living on the island. So I'm not necessarily talking to the Ricans de la Isla. I'm talking to all the ones here, and all the ones here, their experiences are very similar to mine. So they totally understand.
Well, and that too seems to be reflected quite well in your book, Ileana, because it seems as though as I go through these recipes, there are just not a lot there that I wouldn't be able to pick up at a local grocery store and take home and make my own.
Right, exactly.
What would be an easy one for me to try? Something that, you know, would be a basic level, 100 level course of Puerto Rican cuisine.
I always tell people to start with the carne guisada, but I tell them to start with pollo guisado, which is made with chicken. If you're going to make it with like beef, then it's called a carne guisada. If you make it with chicken, it's called pollo guisado. I always tell people to start there because chicken is so readily available and because it's so affordable and everything that goes into it, you can find at any grocery store across the country.
Pollo guisado, take us through it a little bit.
So all you do is, if you want to, you can fortify what's in the sofrito by first sauteing like onions and garlic, which I usually do. And then I will sear off some chicken thighs. Sometimes, if I'm in a rush, boneless, skinless chicken thighs because the prep's already done for you. And then I add a little bit of tomato sauce, a little bit of water, some olives, some olive brine. And then I'll let that braise for like 40 minutes or until the chicken is tender. And then right towards the end, that is when I will add my sofrito, because I feel like it kind of serves a more kind of vibrancy, more kind of like a herbal punch, you know. You can taste all of the herbs that are in the sofrito. And then I usually make it and serve it over white rice.
It sounds delicious, and it's all part of her new cookbook, Diasporican, a Puerto Rican cookbook, from our guest, Ileana Maisonet, food columnist and author, and we're talking about Puerto Rican cuisine, and we invite you to join our conversation. Do you have any connections to Puerto Rican culture? And if you've been to Puerto Rico, what did you try that you'd like to try again now that you're back home? Tell us your experiences. 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. This week's Food Friday continues, coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn, and we're picking up our talk with Ileana Maisonet. She was the first Puerto Rican food columnist in the U.S. Her new book is called Diasporican, a Puerto Rican cookbook. And we want to hear what you think at 1-800-642-1234. What would you like to try? Is Puerto Rican cooking a part of your family tradition? And what experiences have you had with Puerto Rican food? Join us. And if you have any questions, we've got the expert here, but evidently, you know, it can run the gamut. So it's all to taste, and from family passed down from generation to generation, as our guest details with us this afternoon. The number again, 800-642-1234. We covered pollo guisado here, Ileana, and I wrote down olive brine, because that's something, why have I not put that in my food before? That sounds like a wonderful way to add a little bit of punch to just about anything. But when I'm looking for other recipes, some can, as you write in your book, some can take years to come up with, like mallorcas. Can you explain a little bit of these and why the recipe, developing this recipe, took so long for you?
Oh, because I'm not a baker. I'm born a baker.
Well, that's easy.
It's really that simple. I'm just a horrible, horrible baker. You know, I think that a lot, there are not, at the time, there weren't a lot of recipes available for mallorcas, because the two places that are really well known for mallorcas in Puerto Rico are obviously very protective of the recipes. Mm-hmm. They're also both very old. One of them is like 100 years old. It's still open in Old San Juan. And so the recipes that were available, I started to think that a lot of people were not testing the recipes that they were writing. So the first couple of times that I tried it, they were, you know, really bready and very dry, and they were not reminiscent of the mallorcas that I had. So I knew that that wasn't the recipes that I needed to, that I was going to settle on. So that's why I was trying to mimic the ones that I knew.
And you've got that in your book.
I think so.
And would I'm not a baker either, but it doesn't seem like it's so complicated that I couldn't give it a try and see if I can come up with something.
No, you can. I mean, it's still going to be a pain, in my opinion, but it might be worth it. It depends.
Let's go back to your calls now at 1-800-642-1234, where Celia in Madison joins us. Good afternoon, Celia.
Good afternoon. I am a huge fan of Puerto Rico. I've been there twice, to Boquerón and Vieques, and the Ponce de Leon restaurant in New York. And I always eat Goya beans, especially the black ones. But my question is, at the restaurant in New York years ago, I had Spanish green sauce, which is different from the Italian. And I did find a recipe for it, but now I've lost it. Can you? What are the greens in Spanish green sauce, specifically made by Puerto Ricans?
Great question. Ileana?
I'm assuming she's talking about sofrito, because in, you know, Italy and Italians, they have their own sofrito, and we have our sofrito. But the green version is what I was talking about earlier, which is the recaito.
And that would, I remember the garlic.
Right, so it has the cilantro, the recao, the garlic, the onions, and the peppers.
So does sofrito sound about right to you, Celia?
Even about this, it was a sauce, and you couldn't distinguish the leaves of anything. That's what made it different.
Huh. Interesting. Any idea, Ileana?
Nope.
Interesting. But so you mentioned, and Celia, I appreciate the call because you mentioned the Spanish green sauce and the Italian green sauce, and it comes with this complexity of cultures that is reflected in the food. And how does this complexity of Puerto Rican culture reflect itself in the food as you see it and you cook it, Ileana?
Well, it's just like what I said earlier. Just because you have a sauce at a Puerto Rican restaurant doesn't mean that it's a Puerto Rican sauce. It can be particular to that particular restaurant.
Sure, sure. And, you know, your book also lays out some of the traditions and methods that are central to Puerto Rican cooking. What are some of the most important practices that you follow in your work?
You know, I just try to follow my grandma's recipes because that's what's true to me. That's my own experience, you know. And I just, being from Northern California, I just try to use the freshest ingredients possible because that's how I like to cook, and that's, I like to support my local farmers, and I like to go out to the farmers market and stuff like that. So those two things are just things that I usually abide by.
And when we talk about, you know, the Spanish green sauce, the Italian green sauce, part of this is not directly mentioned, but let's bring it up, the colonization and how, what kind of impact that has on Puerto Rican culture and food.
Right. Well, I'm not sure what Italian green sauce has anything to do with Puerto Rican sauce okay. at all. I'm totally baffled by that. I don't know. You know, like as far as colonization goes, what we have, as you can clearly see, is like a huge Spanish influence, African influence, and then our indigenous influence, which is what most Puerto Ricans like to say that they are made up out of: Taino Indians, Africans, and the Spaniards.
There's another recipe that looks easy to me. Ileana Maisonet, our guest for this week's Food Friday, food columnist and author of the cookbook, Diasporican, a Puerto Rican cookbook. Forgive me if I mispronounce this, Ileana. Funche? Is that how you pronounce it?
Funche.
Funche. Yeah, yes. This looks like I could do this. Tell us about it.
Well, funche is just like what a lot of people would call porridge. It's made out of cornmeal, mm-hmm. and you can add water if you don't have access or money for milk, or you can use milk. Most of the time it's made with coconut milk, and it can be eaten for breakfast with like cinnamon and brown sugar, but it can also be eaten as a base for like I use it for my shrimp and grits, but it's also used with like a bacalao stew.
Shrimp and grits. That speaks to me. Let's continue with your calls now at 1-800-642-1234 for our guest, Ileana Maisonet. Lori in Beaver Dam, good afternoon.
Hello. I just wanted to comment or have your speaker comment on lechon, I believe it's called. I've been to Puerto Rico twice, and we love searching for the, I think it's like a rotisserie pig. They do the whole pig, and it seems like it's only on Sundays, but it's delicious.
Sunday rotisserie pig in Puerto Rico, Ileana?
Well, so lechon is spit, our traditional pig. It's spit roasted over an open fire. There is an area in Puerto Rico called Guadate El Calle, which is like, it's like just, they have a long, it's called the Ruta de Lechon. So it's just a entire road of various different lechons that you can go and visit. And everybody kind of like, you know, battles each other for like the best lechon. It's in the mountains, and I don't think that that's just on Sundays. I feel like some of them are also open during the week. Well, I know some of them are also open on the weekdays. Most of them are open on Saturdays and Sundays. And we typically roast pigs for like special occasions and the holidays, just because it takes a lot of time.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. Let's go now to Melissa in Mequon, who joins us. Melissa, good afternoon.
Hi, how are you guys?
Good, thank you. What do you have for us?
Well, I am just desperate to find some authentic culantro seeds, and I'm just wondering if there's a recommendation of an online place or, you know, somewhere to source them.
Authentic cilantro seeds. Ileana?
No, culantro seeds.
Culantro seeds. My apologies. Yeah.
You know, I don't particularly know a source. I know they're available online, but you could try Google is your best friend, as I tell everyone.
You can Google that. One of the other cooking aspects of Puerto Rican food is from, you know, deep frying. And so how prominent is deep frying in Puerto Rican cooking, Ileana?
I personally don't think that it's that prominent. When we're talking about frituras, they are mostly like special occasion party holiday snacks. You know what I mean? The reason why I think that there's, and it just seems like maybe it's prominent because there are so many varieties, but that's because they're so easy and quick to make. And you really only get them in Puerto Rico when you're on the beach because it's a quick snack to have and it's a perfect accompaniment to an icy cold beer.
Mm, yes. What with your book, Diasporican, what are your hopes for it? And it came out last year, but, you know, what do you hope folks get from it when they open it up?
I think what I am always talking about, that there is no one way to make Puerto Rican food. Your way is not the way.
Even my way would not be the, I mean, obviously my way would not be the way, but it's not, wouldn't be the wrong way necessarily. It's, so what makes, is it what tastes right for you? Is it what the family has passed down to you? How do you define it, you know, from your cookbook, what is Puerto Rican food?
It's all of that. It's how, it's how you remember it. It's how you enjoy it, you know? Like, there are always going to, because there are always going to be similar components to all of our recipes with, like, little minute tweaks. So it still kind of exists in the way that it should.
And I've got to ask, what are you cooking next? What's in your kitchen and what are you getting ready for?
Well, it's Lent, so I am a cultural Catholic, so I will be cooking fish tonight.
give us some idea. How are you going to be cooking it up?
I'm just going to make my fish. I'm making some cod with just a lot of lemon, because that's how I like it. And I'll be using my adobo seasoning that I made with a company called Burlap and Barrel. It's a salt-free adobo. And we also have a sazon, and we're the only sazon on the market that uses wild achiote directly from Puerto Rico.
So you're just taking your own spices and use them, and you make it very easy for the rest of us, Ileana.
It's super easy. All it is just cod, lemon, adobo, some butter. I'm literally going to put it in a foil packet and put it in an air fryer.
Oh, Ileana, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you for having me.
Ileana Mazanet, the first Puerto Rican food columnist in the U.S., with us today to share her new book, Diasporican, a Puerto Rican cookbook. Coming up Monday on The Morning Show, two-thirds of the way through tax season, Kate Archer Kent checks in with the state revenue secretary about filings, the budget surplus, and the outlook for the budget writing season. That's coming up Monday morning here on the Ideas Network from 7 until 9.
Make them laugh, make them laugh. Don't you know everyone wants to laugh?
You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Rob Ferret. And coming up tonight on 1A Plus, it's your weekly roundup from Jen White, which includes a banking collapse, an oil drilling deal, and the latest on a Texas court case that could upend access to reproductive health care nationwide. That's tonight at 6 on 1A Plus. Now, whether you're laughing to avoid an awkward situation or laughing because something funny happened, laughter of any kind can often boost our mood. And it's not just good for our mental health. Our next guest joins us to talk about the health benefits of laughing and why she's trying to laugh more each day. And maybe you should, too. So we want to hear from you this half hour. What makes you laugh? Do you try to laugh every day? And do you find laughing improves your mood? Join us. 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email us, ideas@WPR.org. Lisa Dietlin is a keynote speaker, author, and founder of the Institute of Transformational Philanthropy. And Lisa, welcome back to Central Time.
Oh, my goodness. So happy to be with you, Lee. And you know what? It's St. Patrick's Day. I think when all of us think about St. Patrick's Day, we all laugh and smile.
Absolutely. So, but how did you start down this personal voyage or investigation into laughter and what it means for you and everybody else?
You know, that is a great question. I think it first came to me when I was thinking about my mother's life. My mother is still alive, and she's in her early 80s, and she had a tough life. You know, many people have tough lives, and they become very bitter. And I have those people in my family. But when I thought about my mom, and as you know, I'm an author, I thought the title of the book would be My Mom's Story, A Life Lived in Courage and Laughter. And I started thinking about how often my family laughs. And that is one of our favorite things to do. And we are boisterous at Lee, and we are loud, and we laugh a lot.
Oh, you're those kind of laughers. I am too. So, but you found that there, it's not, first of all, this laughter thing that we do, it's not a language, it's not cultural, it's universal, or at least among humans, isn't it? Is there any humans that don't laugh?
No, that's what was shocking to me when I started doing some research is that, you know, when people go and travel, whether they're anthropologists, archaeologists, sociologists, anyologists, no matter what group they meet, they find that laughter is universal. And it's not just in humans, Lee. Hmm. Primates are siblings or sisters or close related relatives in the terms of the ape family, gorillas and chimpanzees, they actually laugh too. So it's a little bit more than beyond human beings. But when you think about all the places we travel and trying to fit in, you know, I love to travel internationally and I always try to prepare by studying a few phrases in a different language or understanding the customs. But I find if I have laughter in my toolbox, in my hip pocket, it goes a lot further in the conversation than, you know, getting frustrated that I didn't say the phrase right, or I didn't, you know, use the correct fork or whatever. I just love to laugh.
Well, and it can be a salve, certainly. But where does laughter fit in our human development? How does it evolve from, you know, from childhood, from infancy? I mean, do
it evolves. Go ahead.
Do we laugh before we speak?
Yes, we sure do. How many of us don't look at little babies and love it when they smile at us or when they do that first giggle and they have those bubbles coming out of their mouth? And we just get so effervescent around babies when we want them to laugh and we want them to smile. And people who study babies find that babies usually start laughing. Are you ready for this, Lee?
Yeah.
At 3 months old. They start laughing at 3 months old.
Well, Lisa, they're not laughing at us. They're laughing with us.
Absolutely, they are. And, you know, it does so much for your mental health. I know we're going to talk about the physical part, you know, how it affects you physically. But in this day and age, when we talk and we're so worried about the mental health of so many people, especially our young people, our Gen Zers and Gen Yers, and it is such an endorphin release that you have this momentary high, and it helps. Studies have shown that it really helps your mental state. And I'm not talking about poking fun at somebody or laughing at somebody in distress. I mean, that's not the type of laughter we're talking about. We're talking about laughter that, you know, comes from the tips of your toes to the top of your head, and that really allows you to enjoy the moment that you're in, even if you're laughing at yourself.
Lisa Dietlin, our guest, I'm laughing with her right now, and we're inviting you to join our conversation at 1-800-642-1234 with an important question about our health, the mental and physical. What makes you laugh and why? Let's start with Lynn and Lyons this afternoon. Lynn, good afternoon.
Hi.
Hi, what do you think?
I actually had a question. I don't laugh. Is it because I've heard every joke on the planet, or is there something wrong with me?
You don't laugh? Do you find things funny? And what's your response when you find something humorous?
I find it funny, but I don't respond.
Huh. That's interesting.
You know, I will jump in here, Lee. You know, recently, you know, last week, Lynn, is it? That's your name, right, Lynn?
Yep.
Okay, last week, Lynn, as you know, was International Women's Day, and Gloria Steinem was on many broadcasts and podcasts and interviews, and she said something that I had never heard before. She said, "Laughter is the only free emotion. It's the one that cannot be commanded, that you cannot be commanded to laugh. you know, can't be like, I'm going to tell you this joke and you're going to laugh, or you're going to love this line in this movie or this sitcom. And she said, it's a way of, in her opinion, and whatever you think of Gloria Steinem, you know, it's in her opinion, the one emotion that we can control. You can be commanded to cry. You know, we see actors and actresses cry on cue, or she says, you know, we can be made to feel like we're in love, but you cannot be made to laugh. So I haven't dug deep enough to understand why you might not laugh. You might find it humorous, but you might not laugh. But if you take a page out of Gloria Steinem's book, she would say it's about a control issue, that it's you saying, I find it humorous, but I'm just not going to laugh.
Interesting. And Lynn, thank you so much for that perspective. Let's go now to Ginny in Platteville, who joins Lisa Dietland. Ginny, good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi.
Wanted to make a comment. I volunteer one day.
Oh, you're cutting out a little bit here, Ginny. Give me a second, and we'll get back to you in a second once you get a better cell reception. We'll try again because I really want to hear from you. But
I do too.
I will ask you, Lisa, if there are ways, tools, or tips we can use to get more laughter out of our day, how can we find it without forcing it? Maybe it's a good question for Lynn as well.
Well, I think, yes, you can find it and you can incorporate it in your life. You know, some of the things that are recommended is have humorous things around you. I don't know about you, but I have bulletin boards in my office and whiteboards and pushpin boards. And I'm always, you know, I always put up sayings or things that bring a smile to my face. I have this one which shows this lady, you know, dressed in like her Sunday best, and there's a puddle, and it says, sometimes the best answer is what the heck, and she's going to jump the puddle. Every time I look at it, I do just like that. I just laugh like, yeah, you know, like what the heck, I'm going to try, you know, and the lady probably in the picture appears to be about 60 years old. And she's like, what the heck, I'm going to jump this puddle. And so one of the recommendations is, you know, to put humor on your horizon, have things in your house that make you laugh or make you smile. I love MASH. I have rediscovered MASH. You know, I don't think we watched it growing up. You know, I didn't have uncles that went and fought in the Vietnam War or aunts that were nurses, but I put on MASH when I want a good laugh. And the antics of Alan Alda and, you know, William Ogden Steers and all the other castmates, you know, just make me laugh from the tips of my toes to the top of my head. Their antics are just unbelievable.
I appreciate that perspective. Let's see if we can get back to Ginny now with a better reception. Ginny, can you hear us?
Yeah, I went to my cell instead of my hands free. Can you hear me better?
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. Absolutely.
Okay. I volunteer one day a week at a thrift store in town, and everybody who's there wants to be there, loves being there, and we laugh so much. And everyone who's there, the customers, the employees, everybody is so happy when they're there, and you leave there feeling good. And I think a big secret is to be around people who want to be where they are. Volunteering is a huge thing for me.
I love that. And while you might not get paid in currency, there is a certain currency to laughter, right, Lisa?
Yes,
absolutely. I agree with Ginny. You know, Ginny, when you were saying that, I was thinking I volunteer at our food bank, the Greater Chicago Food Depository here in Chicago. And the last time I volunteered to put boxes together, I always seem to get on the box duty, like physically putting the boxes together, you know, so there's paper cuts happening and you're wrestling these boxes, and they put on the best music, and I love music. And so I'm dancing and I'm singing and I'm making, and everyone is just cracking up laughing, you know, and before you know it, other people are being silly. And because we all want to be there, Ginny, like you said, at the thrift store, everybody wants to be there. Everyone has a smile, and it just takes one spark. You know, it takes one person saying, oh my gosh, let's all have a dance party, or oh my gosh, you know, isn't this fun? And I think in life, sometimes we get way too serious. My bookkeeper always says in my company about 2:30 in the afternoon, dance party. Exactly, Lee. Who doesn't love a dance party, you know?
Well, we are having a virtual dance party here on Central Time this afternoon with our guest, Lisa Dietland, keynote speaker, author, and founder of the Institute of Transformational Philanthropy. And we're talking about the importance of laughter with you at 1-800-642-1234. More of your calls and the reasons why we laugh next on Central Time. Hey, it's Central Time. I'm Lee Rayburn, and we're continuing our talk with Lisa Dietland, the founder of the Institute of Transformational Philanthropy, about why she finds joy in laughing and looks at it as a way to deal with some difficult things that happen in all of our lives. So what makes you laugh? Do you ever force a good laugh just to feel better? And how do you feel like laughing can change a social situation? 1-800-642-1234, where Dee in Bayfield standing by. Dee, good afternoon.
Well, good afternoon to you, and thank you for taking my call. What I like about those moments when we discover laughter is it takes me down a notch. And, the example I gave the operator is those moments when I think I have it all together. I think I'm on top of mindfulness, that I'm living in the here and now, and then I end up pushing on the pull door. or I try to get out of my car and I still have my seatbelt on. And so it's those moments when I get a dose of reality. Nature is sort of tapping on my shoulder and saying, not yet. You're not perfect yet.
Yes, but it's also a sense of forgiveness and grace that it's really that's really what it is to me anyway. It gives yourself a great degree of grace and the ability to laugh at yourself, I would imagine, is a perfect salve for every time you feel your pride hurt a little bit.
It absolutely is. It's a balm for the soul. You know, It takes you out of your seriousness. Like, oh my gosh, I made such a mistake. You know, I am up here on television and I was in a chair getting ready, and it was a higher chair, and I dropped something on the floor and I went to put my foot down. So I'm in like a high bar stool getting ready for the next segment, and they're on camera. The anchors are on camera. So I take my foot and I stretch it to grab that thing, you know, to roll it back toward me. And I fell out of the chair.
Oh.
I literally fell out of the chair, and I'm in this skirt and I'm on the ground, and it goes boom in the studio. And thank gosh they were going to commercial, but the anchors came running over and Rosemary came running over, and they're all like, are you okay? And I just laughed because the next time I came, they had a step stool for me.
They were prepared for Lisa Dietland.
They were, and I wasn't, you know, I just thought, and my only thing was, I remember looking at the camera guy, like, is my necklace straight? Like, now I'm all disheveled. And I kid you not, to a person after that interview, people said, my gosh, your eyes were just sparking, like you were just on fire. And I thought, oh my God, if you only knew. And I told them, they go, oh my gosh. So it is true. Whether you push the pull door or pull the push door or whatever you do, you got to have some humor at yourself, you know, and be willing to get back, you know, back in the saddle and try again. And, you know, part of it is we live in a world that so much is thrown at us, you know, Lee, that is negative. And my alma mater, Michigan State, had the shooting recently and going on in Turkey and Syria, let alone, you know, the shootings that happen every day all over the world and what's going on in the Ukraine. And I thought, how do I get through it? And I thought, laughter, you know, making time to laugh, because otherwise you drown in the sadness.
And you know, from the news perspective and dealing with news every day, and then sometimes filling in a live radio show, I inevitably virtually fall out of my chair all the time. So let's continue with the conversation with calls at 1-800-642-1234. Let me see here. Dennis in Two Rivers, good afternoon.
Hi, Lee. Sometimes we need to have a laugh because of all the serious things going on. Like, I know this is a month and a half late, but what bugs me are soil hoarders.
Soil hoarders? I am not familiar.
Well, they're celebrated on February 2nd. Why would we celebrate groundhogs?
But we love to laugh at Punxsutawney Phil, Dennis. We love to laugh at everyone in top hats. It's so silly.
You got a problem with groundhogs, Dennis?
Yeah, and he doesn't Chuck Woodworth a darn either.
Oh, Dennis, I think you called to make us laugh.
Thank you for that, Dennis. We need that. Let's go to Steve, who's driving through. Steve, good afternoon.
Yeah, hi, this is Steve. listen, I'm a musician, and I play at nursing homes, and that includes memory care, assisted living, and independent living. In fact, I'm driving right now back from a gig at a nursing home, and I'll tell you, I play music. I try to choose music that's going to make them smile, going to make them laugh. This afternoon, I played some music that just got people up laughing and dancing and carrying on. It was a treat just getting people out of, you know, the isolation of living under those conditions and that sort of thing. And, it was just memorable.
Yeah, so. Memorable for them, but it sounds like you got as much out of it as anybody else, Steve.
Absolutely. Absolutely correct.
So,
and you know,
yeah, Lisa,
Steve, what I'm thinking about is during COVID, how we found things like that when we were locked in, and whether you believe we should have been shut in or not, what was beautiful is how creative we all got, you know, and how many videos we'd watch or things on Facebook or Instagram or whatever of people being really creative and just to laugh because it just seems so serious around us. And you're absolutely right. When you're isolated, you need a good belly laugh and a good reason to smile.
We've got our Central Time producer, Emily Burdett, told us how she resets after a day of reading some tough news stories, which has been part of her job for the last year. And it's her last day today, so it's a little bittersweet for all of us. But she sounded off on what makes her laugh.
Something that seems to always be able to lighten my mood is just going to the dog park with my dog or going out for a walk in nature and just sort of, especially if I've been reading a lot of sad news stories or I feel like there's just a lot of bad things going on in the world at that time, just kind of putting my phone away, leaving my phone at the house and going outdoors and hanging out with my dog and seeing other people's dogs.
Lisa Dietland, can you explain to us why it is that our domestic animals bring us so much never-ending joy?
I don't understand it because I'm not an animal lover. No, I do. I obviously do. I have friends that do it. I grew up with animals, and many of my siblings have cats and dogs. And they bring that comfort. They bring that emotional support. And they're silly, you know. They do silly things. They have silly grins on their face, or, you know, they chase their own tail, or their, you know, paw in the sunlight. And they just bring us that comfort that we so need in our lives. And I'm so sad to see Emily go. I'm glad for the adventure ahead of her, but I am glad that she has realized that when you deal in a tough business, as you folks do, with the difficult news that comes every single day to your doorstep that you have to report on, that finding those outlets, finding those moments that bring humor to your life or a smile, you know, it's the small things. Even if you don't have a belly laugh, you know, and I know some of us are dealing with really serious issues, even if you don't have that belly laugh, find something to smile about. And if it's throwing a stick for your dog to retrieve, or catnip for your cat, or, you know, walking outside, or knowing a good knock-knock joke, watching a old sitcom that brings a smile to your face. There's nothing like, you know, a deputy Barney Fife on Andy Griffith, you know, that slapstick Jerry Lewis or Dean Martin, whatever it is that brings a smile to your face, that lightens your mood a little bit. It does help you physically, your internal organs, you know, reap the benefit of it. Your blood pressure goes down. They actually say that there was a study done. I can't believe all the studies that are done on laughter, Lee, but there was a study done saying that if somehow people who had heart attacks and then they're in a restaurant and something happens, water gets spilled on them, wine, the people that laugh have like this 80% less likelihood of having a second heart attack if you laugh at the fact that water was spilt on you or wine spilt or something happened than if you got really angry. And I thought, boy, that's a really special area of research, but I'm all laugh when something bad. And I've seen, you know, we've all seen that where a plate of spaghetti falls off the plate, or, you know, I had a friend and in a pub we were in, and a board member was trying to be funny, and he had the tray over his head and brought it down, and every drink fell on her head. Ooh. I mean, like, she was drenched, and he was horrified, and she laughed.
It's about how you react to it and what that reaction means about not just your mental health, but your physical well-being. Lisa Dietland, we are out of time, but I want to thank you so much for yours this afternoon and for the good laughs.
Oh, thank you. And thank you to all of our callers, too. Keep laughing.
Lisa Dietland, keynote speaker, author, and founder of the Institute of Transformational Philanthropy, joining us today to talk about why she started laughing more and the importance of experiencing laughter.